From the Hope 205 Studios, a Joe Louville Productions studio venture.
Imagine a workplace where leaders focus on empowering their teams, where the growth and well-being of people are at the heart of every decision. This isn't a distant dream. This is Activating Hope.
Facing unprecedented levels of disruption, anxiety, and ambiguity, leaders in your organization need more support and direction now than ever before. Coaching is critical, but coaching means different things to different people and can vary greatly in its effectiveness depending on the methods and strategies used. So how can you be intentional in creating a coaching culture? How can you incorporate objective data into the coaching process to increase impact? In this episode of Activating Hope, we'll discuss methods for creating a data-supported coaching culture that yields measurable results. As a measurement strategist, Whitney Martin's passion and expertise lies in the field of surveys and assessment. A self-professed data nerd, Whitney has a master's degree in the field of human resources management and evaluation, and has conducted extensive research on the predictive validity of various hiring assessments and strategies. Whitney has been a highly rated speaker at several national HR conferences and has authored articles on assessments for several books and publications, including Harvard Business Review. She's a member of the Society for Industrial Organizational Psychology and has 2 decades of experience working in the assessment industry. We're excited to have Whitney with us on this episode of Activating Hope. I am especially excited to have our guest on the show today because I realized as I was going through and getting ready for this talk with Whitney today that we have been friends, Whitney, for now over 2 decades.
That is hard to believe.
that is some hard data to believe. That's what I thought. And I have to say that I remember, I don't know if you remember this conversation, but we were sitting in a Panera and I had connected with you and I was really thinking about leaving the corporate world to start consulting, and you were doing that. And so I was just kind of like talking to you about what does that look like? How does that go? And so you were very instrumental in helping me launch my business with the advice you provided. So I congratulate you because you are about to celebrate coming up on 22 years of business with Proactive Consulting. So woo!
Yeah, thank you. That is, it's hard to believe, like you said, that it's been that long, but it's definitely been an awesome experience and full of ups and downs, but more ups than downs. So that's what makes it worth it.
Well, I love it. And Whitney calls herself a self-professed data nerd. Is that true?
That is right. Yes. Depends on which audience I'm with, right? Like occasionally I would be embarrassed to say that if I'm with people much, much smarter. But yeah, I like to bring kind of a data-oriented objective approach to the people side of the business that you and I deal with every day.
Yes. And I love our collaboration. And so what we're here to talk about today is how do we create a effective coaching culture? And, you know, a lot of that is around data, which is your area of expertise. I lean into you for that. So when you're talking about coaching or leadership development, and this is something that's very near and dear to my heart because I do a lot of these, why do you think that 360s are so critically important? Like to start the process there, why is that important?
I really do firmly believe that there is so much value that we can get by incorporating 360 feedback into any sort of coaching or leadership development initiative. And there's really two, I think, big reasons I believe that. So first is that if you really want to achieve behavior change, there has to be buy-in. Like the individual has to buy into the fact that that behavioral change is needed. And so, you know, for example, one of the other things that I do in my business is employee surveys. And it frequently happens where I will do an employee survey and I'm getting feedback about HR being meddlesome and annoying and, you know, just doing things for the sake of doing things. And I'm thinking, oh, good grief. Like what problem is this that I'm going to have to solve? It turns out that the employees are complaining about the safety initiatives that HR is putting into place. They're like, they make us wear these uncomfortable shoes and they paint lines all over the floor and they make it really hard to do our job. So what that tells me is that the employees do not perceive that there is a risk, right? They are being forced to do these things in a certain way. They're being forced to make changes without actually buying into the fact that those changes are needed. And so what happens is they will walk in those lines while somebody's watching, but the second nobody's watching, they're going to go back to their normal behavior, right? And so that the only thing that ends up changing that is if there then happens to be an accident or a near miss. And all of a sudden, as soon as the employees perceive the risk, they're like, oh, okay, that now I'm bought into the fact that these things are best for us. And now they're following those safety rules because they buy into it and they recognize that that's important for their own success. And so I think that's just a great analogy when it comes to leadership development, because a lot of times leaders are being told, you need to change your behavior, but they may not buy into that, right? And so a lot of times what we see is when they get this 360 degree feedback, it's feedback they have heard before. It's not completely brand new. They'll be like, oh yeah, my boss has said that to me before, or that, you know, lame employee that quit last month told me that. But it's easy to dismiss that kind of feedback when it's just coming kind of, it feels like somebody's opinion. It feels like kind of one-offs. And so I have this like analogy where I'll say, like, if somebody tells you you have a green tail, they're crazy, right? Like, it's really easy to just say, like, they're loony. If two people tell you they have a green tail, you can think they're ganging up on you and there's some conspiracy. But if three people say you have a green tail, that's when you might want to turn around and look and see what's going on back there, right? And so that's kind of what 360s do, is present that data in a way that's, you know, harder to dismiss or ignore. And it allows you to see, like, okay, is this just a squeaky wheel? Is this just one or two people that have a problem with me? Or is this more of a consensus from all of these stakeholders that actually care about me and care about my success as a leader? And so not only do we get to see kind of those trends and see to what degree these perceptions exist, but then we also get to see the impact that they're having. And this is actually something I've heard you say before, Hope, is that a lot of times leaders are promoted based on bad behavior. And so, like, they might be really, an assertive go-getter, and they keep getting promoted because of that. But if that means they're also impatient and snappy, so what, right? They're like, that's the behavior that people want from me. They expect that from me. And so they've been rewarded for that behavior in the past. And so what the 360 will show us is not just that they have these behaviors, but also what is the impact? Like, okay, yes, you do tend to be impatient and snappy. And while, some of that behavior, or the causes of that behavior might be good, the impact that this is having on the team is that employees feel disengaged. They don't want to come to you with ideas. They don't trust you. And so you're able to kind of see what is the impact of this behavior on the team. It helps you kind of, again, get to that point of acceptance. So I would say, the first thing that I would talk about is that the 360 is beneficial for leadership development because it leads to that acceptance, which is foundational to driving behavior change. And then the second thing is it helps you create a much more targeted and specific plan. Because, like, nobody's got time to waste these days, right? So we can't send leaders to countless classes and have them, reading books and spending day after day in coaching. We've got to really get to the heart of the matter. And so, for example, if we come get a 360 back and this person needs to work on listening, their action plan is going to look incredibly different if their issue is that they just interrupt all the time versus they don't create a comfortable climate for airing concerns versus when I come to them, I think they already have their mind made up. And so they really aren't listening to my input. Like, those are three very different action plans. And also, if everybody thinks that they're a good listener, except for their peers, as an example, they probably know how to listen. Like, we don't need to work on actually getting to be a better listener and working on those skills. We need to figure out why their peers don't feel like they are being listened to. So a lot of times there might be like a silo kind of culture in the organization. We don't have a lot of cross-departmental cooperation. That's the issue we need to work on, is how to, make sure we're being inclusive and seeking that feedback, not working on how to listen. So I love the specificity that a 360 can give you when you're putting together a coaching or leadership development plan, both in terms of creating that self-awareness and acceptance, but then also really getting that very targeted strategic plan Because I know we both have said before, like, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. So data really becomes that roadmap to making sure you're going where you need to go.
Absolutely. And, you know, you and I have seen this happen quite frequently where the boss feedback can be a 180 from the peer feedback, from the internal customer feedback, from the direct report feedback. So it's really figuring out, how do I serve all of these groups of people? And, you know, in some cases, I've also seen where when this 360 feedback comes back, they've never heard any of this before. They genuinely have never heard. So it can go one of two ways. You know, it can go where they have heard it. And I think there is something very powerful in when it's written and you can see numbers, you can see comments versus just somebody saying something to you. Because it's easy to let that fly past. But when you're actually looking at all these different groups, how you're interacting with them, their perception against your own perception. And, you know, sometimes that's in alignment. Most often it's not. It's different. You know, I'm either thinking more of myself or I'm thinking less of myself. So, you know,
I think you make a great point. It's just there's a greater sense of objectivity, and it creates a really powerful platform for these performance conversations when you have this document sitting at the table between you and your boss or you and your coach that you can refer to and use that as a tool to really start having those conversations, as opposed to, oh, well, I heard this snippet of feedback, or, you know, maybe it's just that person's opinion. You know, it's just really hard, you know, to take that seriously sometimes, or just to know what to do with it. And then I also, like you alluded to this, and you've talked about this with the people you coach, but you might end up with a very specific action plan, like different action plans for different stakeholder groups, right? So your action plan with your peer group might look very different than with your boss. And you and I have seen it so many times where, like you said, everybody thinks this person's doing a pretty good job except their boss. And so, what, you know, either there's just literally something going on there, like they just don't like each other, right? Which again, what a waste of coaching and time and energy and money, right? If that's the issue. Or they just need to manage up better. I mean, that's a very different thing than actually trying to work on, you know, developing these skills. So I just love that it gives us that rubric for where to go and why and how to get there and what's the shortest route to get there. It just gives us so much more confidence in the actions that we take in our development initiatives.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that kind of leads me into the next question of, what are some of the most productive outcomes or conversations you've seen come from the 360? So we kind of just started talking about that a little bit of when I sit down with my boss and I go over this, and maybe we've never talked about these things before. But, you know, kind of beyond that, what are some examples you might have that you've seen doing this?
Absolutely. So and I don't know that all 360s have this function, but the one that I use most frequently, there's a place where the boss chooses the six of the 18 competencies that we're measuring. The boss chooses the six that they feel are most important to this individual's job. And the self, or the ratee, also chooses the six that they feel are most important to their job. And it's really eye-opening when we see to what degree they picked the same things. And so I've seen ones where one out of six is the same. So 17% alignment between the boss and the self on where this person's time and energy and effort and passion and priority should be when they're doing their job. And so that can be such a light bulb moment because, you know, let's face it, a lot of people get put into leadership roles. They all of a sudden have direct reports. They have people they're trying to manage, and they're not always well equipped to do that. They're not always great at having performance conversations, setting expectations, level setting, right? Communicating that vision. And so again, this is going to be this document between us where it's going to give the boss a chance to finally say, oh, like maybe I haven't been clear about this in the past, but I wanted you to be focused on A, B, and C. I can now see that you've been over here working your butt off, spinning your wheels on X, Y, and Z. And yeah, no wonder we're a little frustrated with each other. And so it allows them to create that alignment of vision around where their priority should be as a leader. You know, is this the kind of leader who is a working leader and needs to be focused on task management and cracking the whip? Or is this person, you know, really supposed to be in a true, you know, more true leadership role where they're supposed to be delegating and motivating and inspiring their team to get that work done? You know, so sometimes there's just that disconnect. And so that's kind of one of the most interesting things that I think tends to come out of these conversations is a lot of times there's light bulb moments of things that just haven't been communicated as explicitly as perhaps people think they have.
And I love that part of it, because I know when I'm going through it with them, it's always the most powerful part of the conversation when they get that feedback. And then part of their assignment before the next coaching session is to sit down and, as you said, have that conversation about, why did you pick this? Why did I pick that? And I did just recently have two decades I've been doing this with you, I had my first 0%. So the boss and the employee, nothing. They picked nothing in common. And so I remember debriefing it, and the person was like, this seems like this could be problematic. I said, yes, but this is opportunity now. We're going to switch it from being problematic to opportunity. And I've only had, and you've been doing these way longer, using this assessment way longer. I had my first 100% recently. I never have that. I mean, I see it average anywhere from 17% to 67%. I mean, that seems to be just that range. I don't know why. But I didn't know if that's what you have generally seen too. It's just kind of somewhere in the middle of that.
Well, in your example of somebody who's 0% alignment with their boss on where their priority should be, they might be highly effective, right? They might be an effective contributor, maybe even an effective leader in the eyes of their direct reports. But if they're spending all that time and energy and good work in an area that their boss doesn't think is where they should be, now, you know, is there a room for compromise? Sure. It doesn't mean the boss is 100% right and you just have to bend to their will. But to have that conversation of like, hey, I'm hitting on all cylinders over here. Is there a way for us to kind of get on the same page around, is that exactly what I am supposed to be delivering?
Absolutely. And I, like I said, that's one of the most beneficial, many, many beneficial things, but that conversation is so important. So are there ways that organizations can use this 360 data beyond just creating these development plans that we talked about, you know, sitting down, having a conversation with your boss, putting together your areas of focus, what you're going to work on, anything else that you have found that they're very effective for using it for?
What you just described is, you know, and what we've been talking about this whole time is kind of that one-off use case, right? And we're talking at the very individual or the kind of that micro level, right? But there's also a really, really powerful way to leverage these tools at more of that macro or systemic level. If you are doing 360s on groups of leaders, which we frequently, you know, have the privilege of doing, there's a way to start looking at that data at a much more integrated and strategic level. And that's something that is one of my favorite things that I get to do in my job, is when we start putting it together like that, we can see some pretty mission critical things. So for example, you know, yes, everybody's going to put together their own little development plan and work on their own goals, but like, are there some systemic issues, right? Are there areas where the majority of the leaders are struggling with something, where maybe one-on-one coaching is, you know, a support, but maybe there's also some bigger interventions we could do with that team, whether it's, you know, group training or some other types of skill building. We can also see like what the 360 feedback is saying about the culture. So what you and I were just talking about a minute ago, where the bosses themselves pick the most critical competencies in the job. Let's say everybody, you know, the vast majority chose very task-oriented things as being most important, right? Like getting things done and delivering results and achieving results. But, you know, our culture, we claim to be very human-centric. Well, those things weren't actually getting chosen as the bosses themselves by being most important. So what's going on there? Are we playing lip service to this, but, you know, actually holding people accountable to something completely different? You know, what's going on there? So we can kind of look at that cultural alignment piece. And then, you know, one of the most important things I think that comes out of it is looking at, do the strengths of the leaders align with our business value proposition, our strategic plans for how we are going to thrive as a business, you know, in our next 5-10 years. And we, you know, you and I worked together on one where this was kind of a crazy finding. We realized that like 6 out of 10 of their top senior leaders had thinks creatively as one of their lowest scores. So that was, you know, one of their biggest struggles, is they didn't see obstacles as opportunities for creative change. They weren't willing to take bold, calculated risks. They didn't look for opportunities to innovate in the organization. You know, in some businesses, that's not a huge deal. But in this particular company, this was a high tech, high growth, you know, organization where their value proposition in the marketplace was innovation. And if six out of 10 of your top leaders have that as one of their bottom competencies, their worst, you know, biggest weaknesses. Like, what is that saying for us and our potential as a business going forward? And so this was a real, you know, a real opportunity to take this to a very strategic conversation that really kind of meant life and death for the organization. And allows us to start asking good questions, right? So are we saying we want innovation, but then we squelch every good idea that comes out of people's mouths? Or are we bringing people into the organization that really stink at this and we really need to be, you know, hiring for that skill? You know, what's going on? And so it allows us to start really looking at that, at the kind of the bench strength and the, you know, competencies of our leadership team, and to see if they are aligned with what is going to make our business truly successful in the marketplace.
Well, and I love when we can even take that data a step further, and you've worked on projects with me where we have been able to do the 360 on the whole leadership team. So, you know, they may call me in initially and say, we need leadership development training. On what? Like, what are we basing we need this on? Well, they just need to be better at giving feedback, or they need to be better at holding people accountable. I'm like, well, do we know that? So I know that another benefit that, you know, can come from that is when you do take all of that data and you put it together in a leadership team overview, you can really see, well, all right, so these competencies, they really need to work on as a team. And for me, that's where we should build any type of training that we're going to do from. So instead of like, let's just start off with it. And I love when companies will do this, is when we can start with that data, take them through the 6 months of whatever training on the issues or challenges that they have, then let's do a post 360 and let's find out if they moved. Let's find out, as you know, individually, did they grow, and as a leadership team, did they grow? So, you know, I wish more organizations would start there, but often what I find is it's just, we need a class here, we need a class there, or you've probably experienced this. We've had one employee with an issue on holding people accountable. So now we're going to have everybody go through this on, instead of like, that would be a one-off, you know, that's where individual coaching would come in. But when you could look at the whole team, why would we not want to start where the team needs us to start versus just throwing something out there?
I couldn't agree with you more. And I do agree that it's far, we don't see this nearly as much as we should, right? You get a call, you're like, hey, we need leadership training. You know, we've got it in our budget this year. What can you do for us? Well, right. That is really fundamentally the wrong question, right? And so then what we do is we send them a list. Well, here are all the classes we have. You check off, which sounds good. You know, how many leaders listening to this podcast have wasted time sitting in a class that they did not need? I mean, goodness gracious, the amount of time and money spent wasted, you know, on just training that isn't on point, that isn't needed, that isn't effectual, there's no accountability, like all of those things, right? And so you flip that on its head in the example you just gave and say, okay, you truly want to invest in your leaders, let's do some analysis to figure out where you get the biggest bang for your buck. And then let's put together a, you know, multifaceted development initiative that involves some training, some coaching, some support, some accountability, some measurement. There, now, all of a sudden, we've got ROI, and actually measurable ROI, which is pretty darn cool when we can take it to that level.
Oh, that just gives me cold chills thinking about.
I know, right?
Do that. I'm like, oh my God, you want to like build something? You want to connect it? You want to thread it through instead of just one off thing that a year from now we don't remember. It wasn't impactful. There was no ROI, and so. Yes, I think, you know, for the leaders listening, like you said, and the organizations, you have to be intentional about all of this. You know, that's mm-hmm. If you really, really want to create that impactful culture, you've got to be intentional instead of just kind of let's throw off one thing here, see if it sticks. Rarely do those things work out. I mean, you might still be producing, but you will not be as effective as you could be.
It goes back to that safety example I give. I mean, almost every leader in every organization has to attend some safety or compliance training in the year, right? You have to sit through the sexual harassment 50-minute online course, and you are multitasking while you're doing it. But you just have to check that box, right? And so do we want our leadership development time and energy and money to be a check the box? Or do we actually want to make change? And so I think that is the difference between the two approaches we've been talking about.
I agree. So what other kinds of assessments might companies want to consider using as part of their development or coaching initiatives?
That's such a good question, because I really do, it is definite best practice to kind of have a multi-treat, multi-method approach. And I'll tell you why. So the 360s, if you think about what you're really measuring with the 360, it is kind of the above the watermark. If you think of that classic iceberg analogy, right? The above the watermark, it's the behaviors that are observed, because that's what we're asking people to rate, is how often do you observe somebody demonstrating these behaviors? But other assessments will help us understand what's below the watermark that's causing those behaviors, and should then drastically impact what methods you might want to use to change that behavior. So I'll give you an example. Like we talked about listening earlier. Let's say this person gets feedback that you really need to work on listening. You're not being perceived as a very good listener. And we talked about that that could look different depending on what behaviors are being exhibited, right? Or do they interrupt? Do they not create a comfortable environment for airing concerns, et cetera? But then you also want to think about, okay, what else is going on? Are they, you know, just hardwired to be so extroverted that they just never shut up? And so they're perceived as being a bad listener? Or are they so introverted that they avoid human contact, right? And so they're not perceived as being approachable. You know, are they just going at such a fast pace that they never slow down enough to listen? Are they maybe so decisive that they really do kind of already have their mind made up? And so people can kind of see that in the nonverbals when they're expressing ideas, you know? And so that, I think, you know, understanding that beneath the watermark, whether it's behavior or personality or cognitive or values or motivations, understanding how all of those impact the behavior that's being exhibited would drastically change how you go about changing that behavior. You know, if you think about like decision-making is another one, like this person really needs to improve their decision-making effectiveness. Okay, great. Where do we start? You've got to take into account, you know, what's going on. Is there a cognitive component there in terms of their ability to think critically through a problem and problem solve and, you know, arrive at the right conclusion? Are they, you know, maybe stymied and kind of feel nervous about that piece of it? Maybe there's some personality factors, right? Maybe they lack the assertiveness to you know, just make a decision and stick to it. Maybe they are, you know, have some risk tolerance issues that make decision-making difficult. You know, maybe they just don't especially like that part of the job, and so they avoid it. Maybe they don't feel empowered to make decisions. So there's so many facets that go into really understanding what's driving these leadership behaviors. And there are assessments really designed to assess all of those things that I just mentioned. And so, you know, I think incorporating various methods of measurement and looking at different facets that impact the behaviors that are in question is always going to give us a more complete and accurate picture, and therefore a better plan to address it.
Hey, superintendents, school board members, principals, teachers, and educators of all kinds. Does your district or school have some room to grow, or could things go a little better in your school or classroom? Would you like for your kids to learn more and have a more engaging time doing it? Feeling like you need a secret weapon to tackle everything from high-quality instruction to robust professional development, maybe lesson planning or any other tricky challenges your school or classroom might have? We've got you covered at Educational Directions, celebrating 25 years of service in K-12 education. At Educational Directions, we're all about making your life easier. Want free tools to level up your teaching? Done. Looking for thought-provoking blogs full of fresh ideas? We've got those too. Need a customized program for your school's unique set of needs? We're the pros. Stop spinning your wheels and start winning in the classroom. Check us out at www.eddirections.com. That's eddirections.com. Educational Directions, your trusted partner in education. Always innovative and professional. Are you an artist struggling to bring your creative visions to life? Whether you're planning a multi-country tour, mounting a play at a local theater, or recording your first album, Before the Applause is here to guide you through every step of the way. Authored by industry experts Joe DeCenzi and Joe Hanna, this groundbreaking book offers artists the fundamentals of project management paired with leadership skills crucial to getting your artistic projects over the finish line. Unveiling Before the Applause, your ultimate guide to project management for artists.
So that brings to a good point. So
Can assessments be used as a way to measure the effectiveness of development and coaching activities? I mean, like, how would you specifically consult or guide an organization to do that?
So, I mean, this is going to come back to knowing what you're using and why. Okay. So for example, a 360 can be a great kind of pre-post measure when there are coaching or other leadership initiatives going on. And what we're asking somebody to measure via a 360 is, have stakeholders noticed a change in this behavior as a result of the coaching or development you're doing, right? So that's what we are measuring. And so that can be one method of using assessments to kind of measure, have we moved the needle, right? Have these behaviors changed, and have they changed consistently enough and significantly enough that the stakeholders are actually seeing that change, and it'll probably stick, right? It wasn't like they just did it better one time, but it's enough to really move that needle. And so that, you know, using the 360 that way is a great way to make sure we're clearly communicating the expectation and then creating some accountability, right? We're going to measure this again and we expect improvement. So that is one way to do it. But there are other kinds of learning too, right? So for example, there's also affective learning. So has their motivation changed? Like, maybe before they didn't care that they were snippy, right? You know, like that, they just didn't see why that was, you know, like, hey, that's, I'm assertive. I get rewarded for that. You got to just put up with this part of my personality, right? But now maybe based on the feedback, they're like, oh, now I've accepted that I actually need to change that. And now I'm motivated. Now I actually understand that I have a fire lit under me, right? I am motivated to change this behavior. Their mindset, their attitudes, their readiness might have shifted as a result of the work that you as a coach are doing with them. And then they also, you know, might have knowledge or skills that they need to improve. So literally, they just may not know some of the basics of how to delegate, right? They may not have effective strategies for that. And maybe part of what we did was work with them on how to obtain some knowledge and skills that they just had never learned before. So that's where you might use a knowledge or skill assessment to kind of pre-post, right? Did they know it before? Do they know it after? And then there's also other assessments that we measure stable traits. So for example, some personality assessments would measure something like independence or assertiveness. And that's going to be stable. That's hardwired. And so what you are doing there is helping them improve their self-awareness and understand how that affects their ability to perform the job, and then maybe develop some adaptive behaviors when they need to work around an issue, right? So maybe they're not very assertive and they're not very confident making decisions, but we need to help them get better at that. Now, who they are at the core isn't going to change, but maybe we can give them some strategies and some methods to become more effective in spite of the fact that they're not hardwired that way. In that case, if you re-administer the personality assessment, that the scores are not going to change. That would be a very inappropriate way to try to leverage pre-post. But instead, what we would say is, you know, have you learned these adaptive behaviors? Are you demonstrating those? And so just, you know, there are, again, assessment tools all designed to do all those different things. And so it's just really important that you understand truly what's being measured and what the appropriate ways to leverage that are. Otherwise, you can kind of, you know, have some detrimental effects in terms of people not seeing maybe the change that they hoped, or, you know, we're holding people accountable to measures that aren't really supposed to be used that way and that sort of thing.
Well, and as I'm sitting here thinking about this, it makes me think of the times where, you know, there are people that just can't be coached. I mean, there are people that it's not really worth the investment. So is there ever a time that assessments might tell us before the investment happens that coaching is not going to be effective? Because generally I have found it happens once we do this and you get in, and then the person either gets mad about the feedback, they're not committed to it, they're not coming to the coaching sessions. But even before that, is there a way that you can use that to say this person is going to be a good candidate for this development or not?
I think there's a couple things that might be really helpful in that scenario. So I think, you know, one of the first things is job fit. So, you know, I've heard you talk about before, you know, somebody gets put on a PIP, right? They're put on this performance improvement plan because they are just not meeting expectations. You know, occasionally you might get somebody who says, okay, you know, all of a sudden I am been clued in to what's happening and I am super motivated and super committed to changing my behavior. And so obviously that's a great situation. The other thing that I think tends to happen is that person says, you know what, maybe this isn't the right fit for me. And so I think one thing that's really important to take into consideration is job fit. And so there are really excellent assessment instruments that we can use to measure some of those stable traits, right? And to see, is this person in a job where they really get to maximize what they're good at, minimize what they're not good at? And if we are just asking them to be something that they are not all day, every day, there is hardly a person on the planet that can manage to do that and keep performance up and not go crazy, right? And so maybe just, it might be a time to kind of reevaluate, is this even the right job for this person? Because otherwise it just might not be sustainable to try to get them to adjust their behavior in a way that is not really very feasible for them. It's also possible that their values and their passions and their interests just aren't aligned with this job. And if that's the case, they're not motivated to change their behavior for a job they are not passionate about. So there are absolutely values and interest inventories and those sorts of things that would help us understand, you know, is this person committed? Are they going to be committed to this because they understand what's in it for them? And there's something at the end of this journey that they really want and that they're willing to work for. And so, yes, I believe there are ways to leverage tools that would help us, you know, determine, is this coaching engagement even worth it?
Well, and I tell you, I don't like to take these types of coaching engagements, but I have been involved in these type of coaching engagements where an organization wanted coaching for someone to coach them out.
Yeah.
So they were investing in this person to figure out, is it a good job fit? You know, so they said, I think if we coach them, but we don't think they are. So we need you to coach them to get them to the point to realize they're not in a good job fit. And like, I do not recommend going that route with that. I mean, I think that's another conversation. I think that is the performance improvement plan. But, you know, generally I will say we're coaching them in, right? We're doing this for their development and they've got to be committed to doing it. But I've also, a couple have been in that, and I don't know how you feel about that, but I don't think that's a good, effective use of that, you know, and then it's almost like they want to use the 360 as a gotcha, like, see, this isn't good. You know, you're performing terribly, yeah. You know, I mean, and it's just, I think, because then talking about culture, then that's what becomes perceived, you know, the coaching becomes punitive, not positive.
Absolutely.
It's like, we're just using it to weed out the leaders that we don't think are good job fits, just can't make it, don't have skill set, whatever. So, you know, I think it's very, very important you think about how you're using your data and it's in a positive developmental way.
I think sometimes you've got somebody you want to get rid of, but you don't, you know, from a compliance standpoint, the company needs to show that they checked a few boxes, right? Back to that they did some things, you know, that they tried to help this person. And so you get into where that's what that coaching is for, is just to check the box and show that we tried. But good God, what message does that send? And to your point,
exactly.
You know, that's not gonna, you know, if you actually have high potential employees and you're actually trying to build on hidden strengths of your team and all the positive things, it's really hard to do that when when coaching and 360s have a very negative reputation in the organization and there's a huge lack of trust in the process because you're also using them for these, you know, less, more subversive kind of purposes. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Because somebody's like, oh, you're going to get coaching. And then everybody's like, oh my God, I'm getting fired or I'm getting in trouble. You know, it's like, think about it. Think about how we're using this. So there
maybe
are
we need a different word. We need a different yes. word when we're using the coaching for the last resort.
Well, exactly. And I, you know, you and I have talked about this before because I worked with an organization that on the PIP itself, it mentioned coaching several times. Well, nobody wants to go on a PIP. That's not fun. Yeah. That's not, you're not going on that because you're going to be employee of the month. So it's like, think about how you use, you know, like you said, let's maybe use another word here so that this word mm-hmm. doesn't become perceived negatively. So are there any other benefits to using assessments that we might not normally think about?
You know, I think kind of an idea that I heard recently that I thought was interesting is using assessments to kind of expedite the relationship between the coach and the coachee. And it's something I hadn't really thought about, but it makes sense, right? Because we can help create a common language. We can help build trust and get to know each other so much faster. And then really create a tailored approach for the coaching that is tapping into that person's passions and their style and their values. And so all of a sudden they are bought in, they're motivated because they, you know, you understand them and what buttons to push and how to get that fire lit much faster, right? Because the assessment data would give you those insights much faster than just kind of having to feel it out or take their boss's word for it or those sorts of things. So that's just kind of an idea that I heard recently that I thought was an additional benefit that I maybe hadn't thought of before.
And I do love that. I mean, I don't necessarily like to do coaching without the 360 to start, because again, I think we're starting in the dark of someone thinks this person needs to work on this. And is it sometimes true? Yes. Most often it's only partially true and they need to work on a whole nother set of things. But if we don't have that data to know from their stakeholder groups what that looks like, it's not going to be as impactful as it could be. I mean, you may get some results from it, but do we really know what we got? Because we didn't know where we were starting and we don't know where we're ending. So how can organizations decide which assessment tools are best for them beyond just like picking up the phone, calling you for a conversation, which absolutely they should, but because it can be overwhelming to know where to get started, especially because normally HR is in charge of this or organizational development leaders. But how do you pick from the world of 1,000 assessments?
You summed that up really well. So there are literally thousands of tools out there. I think I've alluded to the fact that there are a lot of them designed to do very different things, right? Knowledge, skills, values, personality, cognitive, decision-making, emotional intelligence, behaviors. I mean, those are all different tools designed to do different things. And there is a lot to consider. So reliability, validity, and adverse impact are foundational. I think a lot of times we recognize the importance of that stuff when we're using it for like hiring, but we think, oh, well, we're just using it for development. There's not really those standards to consider, but really there are, because you're using these assessments to make decisions about people's career one way or another. So we absolutely need to make sure that the tools that we're using have scientific rigor behind them. Like, do not go to the internet and find a free assessment. That is not smart. Okay. And like your HR team probably wouldn't do that for hiring, but for some reason in leadership development, you know, once we got people in the door, we just think, oh, it's not that big a deal. We can do whatever. No, you really shouldn't do that. So, that, you know, making sure you're looking at that, the scientific rigor behind the tool is very important. Next is the scale that you're going to be using it. So is this like a one-off? Is this, you know, every once in a while we have a person who needs to do a 360, or is this something we're going to adopt across the board? And that's going to really make a difference in terms of what tool you go with, because some of the tools that are out there require certification and kind of heavy investment on the front end, which wouldn't make sense if you just have a one-off. Others require that, you know, an IO psychologist from the test publisher debrief the results. That's not really large scale sustainable. So, you know, really understanding how we're going to leverage this is going to make it's going to lean you in one direction or another in terms of which vendors and which tests and, you know, tools are going to be the right fit. And then also, do you want to be able to leverage tools for multiple purposes? So there might be some assessments that would lend themselves towards making sure we're hiring for job fit, towards making sure we are being proactive about career mobility. And we're thinking about not just what role this person's in, but which ones they might go to. And we're actually structuring our leadership development around their future career ambitions, right? So there are some tools that might lend themselves to multiple applications in the organization versus some that definitely would not. You would not want to try to extrapolate that data and apply it in a different way. And then there's just pragmatic concerns, right? Like, do we need it in multiple languages? Do we need to integrate with our ATS? What's the cost? Is it the right investment for the level of people we're using it on? So to sum up, you said it right. There is a lot to consider. And jokingly, you said, oh, why don't they just call you? Well, you know, partly like, yeah, I would love for you to do that. But also, I mean, it'd be silly not to, because I have spent the last 22 years as kind of a vendor agnostic consultant helping organizations navigate this question. I'm a firm believer that there is no one size fits all best tool. All of the tools out there have different pros and cons and strengths and weaknesses and situations where they're a good fit and those that they aren't. So why wouldn't you pick up the phone and ask me? I mean, that's a great starting place. But certainly if you're gonna go out there and start a search fresh, make sure you're taking all those things into account. And you're not just picking a tool because the CEO's golfing buddy uses it at his company. All right. Like, that's, we've got to be really much more strategic and intentional about finding the tools that are the right fit for us based on our well-defined goals.
That is so funny you said that, because I do actually know a situation where somebody's spouse was selling some kind of tool, and that is in fact how that person got into the organization to do it. And I'm not saying you don't network and you don't know people, but I think we have talked a lot about intentionality with these. And if you're going to spend the money, just make sure you're spending it on the right thing. I mean, that's, you know, that at the end of the day, what is it you want to measure? What do you need to get out of it? And will this tool do that for us? And I've seen too many times so many tools being used in organizations, and it's not consistent. They're not threaded together. And, you know, then they become a joke. You know, people are like, here we go again. You know, the CEO went out and met somebody, and or worse yet, they went to a conference. They took it. They liked it. They come back. Now we're doing it. And then every 3 years we get a new one. You know what I mean? So I think it's also looking at the longevity of something. Of, can we do this repeatedly? Can we have consistent data with it? Because if we're using multiple things all over the place, how will we really know if we're consistent and, you know, on the ROI?
And I think too, you get, you know, somebody who, again, they're like, oh, we have this tool. We like it. It's fun and easy. And it seems to be pretty accurate. Let's also use it for this, right? And so, and then like a great example is these four quadrant personality assessments, like DISC and Myers-Briggs and Predictive Index. You know, I've seen them, whether they are designed to do this or not, I have seen companies use them very irresponsibly, okay? Where they are all of a sudden pigeonholing people. They're saying, look, you can't move into that role because you're a DI. No DI could do this job. That is not what those tools are designed to measure. And they should absolutely not be leveraged that way. I am waiting for a class action lawsuit. Because they should not be used that way. And it's very, very irresponsible, and it is affecting people's lives in a bad way. And so I think, you know, I just can't emphasize that we have to be really intentional and really strategic and really, really invest the time to understand the appropriate way to leverage assessments, because when they are leveraged well, they can be the most valuable part of this process. I mean, like we've been talking about, they become the roadmap, they become the measure. They, you know, make sure that we're doing the right things and spending the right time and going in the right direction. There's so much power to be had, but just like, it, you know, just like a hand grenade, you pull that pin and you better make sure you're throwing it in the right place, because it's going to blow something up. And so, you know, making sure that we are using these right and appreciating the power behind them is really important.
Absolutely. Well, and I know you and I are very strong about this, but, you know, I'll just use Myers-Briggs, for example. Even they have said this is not a hiring tool. And any time that I've been asked by organizations to come in and do that to help hire, I say that's not what this tool is for, or this is not how I will use this tool. And, you know, I always have your voice in my head when I say that, because I know you talk a lot about that, of just being sure with your hiring, especially because we both know people that have not gotten jobs because they weren't the right four letters.
They don't have the right DISC or the right Myers-Briggs, and that is not what those are designed. And those two vendors are very responsible. They would both adamantly tell you this should not be used for any sort of high-stakes career decision at all. It shouldn't be used in that context in any way, shape, or form. But unfortunately, there are lots of other test publishers out there that have basically the same type of tool, but they push it for a different use. And I think that's irresponsible.
Yeah. And worse yet is when they're hiring.
On my soapbox, so.
I know we could have a whole nother podcast episode talking about this, but we could have a whole show about this, but it really is bad too when they use a free version of it and they're hiring. I'm like, no, don't be doing that. So as we wind down our time together, what would your best piece of advice for our leaders listening to activate hope when it comes to creating this impactful coaching culture we've been talking about, developmental culture even?
Well, I think you know that I have a clear bias, and that is towards leveraging objective data. And, you know, in so many ways in the organization, you know, we use data for everything we do in our companies, right? In marketing, in sales, in manufacturing, in healthcare. But then we get to the people part of the business and we just throw up our hands and think, it's all touchy-feely gut feel. No, like there are absolutely ways that we can and should be leveraging objective data when it comes to making decisions about people in the organization. So I think that, you know, like we've talked about, just having the data to help create acceptance, to create buy-in, to create very targeted and strategic development plans that don't waste people's time and money, that make sense with them, that are aligned with their hardwiring. All of those things would, as you said, kind of activate hope, right? It gives us the best chance of success. And I think that is just in everyone's best interest, and you know, for both the individual and the organization.
Well, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. I mean, you and I mean, we work together, we do things together. We just get very excited about conversations like this. So I want our listeners to know where they can have conversations with you if they're sitting there thinking, listening, going, you know, I really need to be more intentional about what I'm doing with assessments or with the coaching or with whatever it is, because you do a lot of other surveys, you do employee surveys, things like that. But what's the best way to find Whitney?
You could certainly start at the website. So that's www.consultproactive.com. So the company is Proactive Consulting, but the website is Consult Proactive. And then same with the email, whitney@consultproactive.com. And I love doing the data side of the people stuff. So just helping you integrate good data into the people side of the business. And then you get people like Hope, who are good at the actual talking to the humans. I like the giving you the good data so you know what to talk to them about part.
I know. And I always love when Whitney will send me something and she's like, oh, I'm so glad you're debriefing this. Like, here you go. But, and I love that you have the ability to bring me that data. So absolutely. Thank you so much. It has been a pleasure. And you know that I will see you soon.
Awesome. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey. Now go activate your hope, and we look forward to seeing you next time.